Vibe tribes. We are back, people. We are back. And man, a lot has happened. Apologies to the listeners for the time I've taken away from launching some eps. I know that you would have listened to an episode that was released last week, but I actually spent a few weeks in America, which is one of the reasons for this podcast. And today, you know, we've got a return guest. This is third time now. I feel like third. You might need something.
Third,
hat trick.
You know, is that a first or?
It is a first.
Oh, it is a first.
I might need to send you a little satin, just as a thank you.
Yeah.
But for those listeners who are tuning in for the first time, Connor, if you want to quickly introduce yourself.
My name's Connor Okus. I work at Spiral.
That's it.
Focused on bringing Bitcoin to the masses at the minute.
There we go. And before we get into that, guys, just continue to show support to the poddy. Like, subscribe, comment, share with friends at Vibes and Tribes. But yeah, like Connor said, he works at Spiral. And for those who are following Vibes and Tribes on Insta or, you know, our personal Instagrams, you know that myself and Connor, man, we went to Miami for the Bitcoin conference.
Miami.
But before we chop it up about Miami, for those who aren't too familiar with Bitcoin Con, you do a fantastic synopsis. So just give it to them. Give it to them quickly.
What can I say about Bitcoin? It depends on the angle you wanna come from. But I'm sure like the listeners would have at least at this point in 2022 heard of Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's true.
I like to think so. You know, if you're not living under a rock, but yeah, I mean, Bitcoin means different things to different people. I think for us, or you know, people are going to be listening to this all over the world, I can imagine. But if we're talking about for those of us living in the Western world, it represents a truly great opportunity to save for the long term and have your hard labor preserved in a way that can't be confiscated. So, like, we're in a time in the UK where the cost of living is absolutely atrocious. The last 10, 15, 20 years, everything just seems to be going up in price, right? Wouldn't it be nice if all of those things you cared about, the cars, the houses, the education, the travel, all of those things became cheaper over time? Well, Bitcoin gives you the opportunity to make that happen.
Okay.
So it's a way to store value for the long term. It's a way to save for the long term. It's also got the potential to be like the world's first reserve global currency. And you're not too late. So it's 2022. Bitcoin started in around 2008, 2009. And many people think they've kind of missed the boat. But I'd say it's still early and you should still try and get involved. So that's explaining it very, very loosely, very lightly. Like, I don't know how much more you want to...
No, we are going to go into it. But one of the... I think you might even have said this to me. Another, you know, way you can visualize it is for those who think they're late, it's like the internet in the 1990s, right? People thought that the internet was a pile of nonsense, and you see some past interviews where they're like, it's just a fad, but we are still so early. There's still so much adoption to be had, and we're still in the hundreds of millions, and there's what, 7.98 billion people in the world. So yeah, we are very early. But you touched upon the fact that it preserves value and it's going to make things cheaper over time. I suppose, what are some of the properties that allow for that to be the case?
The main thing is the fact that there's a fixed supply. So there's only ever going to be 21 million, or more accurately, there will be no more than 21 million Bitcoins in existence. 21 million might seem like a very small amount of coins. But they can, each coin can be subdivided up to 8 decimal places, basically.
Oh, wow.
Or 100 million Satoshis is what the unit of measurement is called as well.
Okay.
And so what that represents is an absolutely fixed supply. So it's very reminiscent to like gold. So a lot of cultures, a lot of countries, central banks, they will have a reserve of like gold in their central bank. And one of the reasons they do that is because it's not absolutely scarce, but it's scarce. It's hard to bring more into existence. And these are some of the properties that make Bitcoin special. So if we take that to its logical conclusion that, like, if there's a fixed supply of something and the demand for that thing goes up, then the value should also go up. So that's probably the key takeaway, I'd say, that, like, it's the first time we've been able to establish, like, a digital asset that's absolutely scarce and can't be copied. Because when you think of things of a digital nature, you think of, like, photos. Like, you can copy a photo.
Yeah.
But this is the first time we've been able to establish something that's truly digitally scarce. And obviously the value it has is that now you can transport that value anywhere, anyone in the world.
That's massive.
For low cost, at a low cost as well. And everyone's got permission to this system as well. So you can look at it almost like a digital version of cash. It doesn't require a bank. It doesn't require intermediary. You've got something to sell. I've got cash. I want to buy it. All it needs is me and you to facilitate that economic transaction. Take that and put it in the digital world, in the digital realm, and it opens up possibilities for all kinds of stuff.
It does.
Perhaps you're a musician in the UK and you want to, I don't know, a kid in rural Nigeria to be able to purchase your songs, or vice versa. If you're living in the UK and there's a kid in rural Nigeria doesn't have access to a bank account, doesn't have access to financial instruments, they can onboard into the Bitcoin network, have a bank account in their pocket, and start, you know, exchanging their value with the rest of the world, you know. So
yeah, this is fantastic. I suppose the question you must get a lot, like, how did you come across Bitcoin? I know you're a few years into the journey. How did you come across it, and how did you broaden your knowledge, you know, because you sound very knowledgeable?
I got into it 2016, 2017. I'd heard about it way before that from, like, the likes of Max Kaiser and Stacey Herbert, who host a show on RT News. I'd always heard about it, but I never really dove down the rabbit hole. But in 2017, like, I have a technical background, so software engineer, and one of my colleagues just recommended it to me. And at that time, late 2017, like, the price was going crazy. Like, I think at that point, it was like $20,000 for one coin. And it was more of a FOMO into it. I want to make some money as well.
So I put
some money into it. It wasn't a huge amount, but that was the impetus for me to learn more, because like, I have a technical background. So I was like, oh, let me actually try and understand the technology behind it. And when you understand that it's solving very concrete computer science problems, you realize, oh wow, there's a lot of stuff that goes in behind this. There's a lot of cryptography. There's a lot about distributed systems.
There's a lot about programming.
There's a lot about embedded systems, like all sorts of stuff. So go down that hole, and then you understand the economics of it as well, like how it's leveraging a lot of Austrian economic principles. You learn a lot about geography. You learn a lot about energy through mining. Like, it just takes you down this spiral that it's kind of never ending, and it's always new things to learn.
So. We could just unpack this all day, couldn't we? But that makes so much sense. And I suppose for, you know, people who on the fence, or, you know, they've spoken to one of us, they've spoken to a friend, and they wanted something maybe easy to digest to get their head around crypto, well, Bitcoin, besides listening to this, what could you recommend?
What could I recommend? I have some videos online at Hello Bitcoin. We've got a video series where we try and give newbies or beginners a very quick explanation and try to trim the fat around a lot around what Bitcoin's about. So if you go to YouTube, Hello Bitcoin, or our website, hellobitco.in, we've got a video series there. That's probably a good place to start onboarding. And then from there, you'll, like, find...
rabbits.
Yeah, you'll find all sorts of rabbits. And you might be someone who's more into economics, and you go down that rabbit hole. You might be someone who's a techie, and you go down the rabbit hole wanting to develop for Bitcoin. You might be someone who's into philosophy and the philosophical meaning behind what is money. Like, when you start studying Bitcoin, a question that often arises is, what is money? What are the properties that make a good form of money? Like, most of us spend 8 hours a day thinking, we spend 8 hours a day working for usually a lot of the time things we don't necessarily want to do.
Yeah.
ultimately for money, and we never, many of us don't really sit down and ask ourselves the question, like, what is money? Who's bringing the money into existence, and is it being brought into existence in the right way? Yeah, in the right way, in an equitable way. Like, because yeah, some people say like the root of all evil is money, and maybe the further you go down that rabbit hole, you might discover why. Like,
you know, so. And on that note, I think one of my personal recommendations, which Connor did recommend to me, although it's a bit heavy.
It's heavy.
The Bitcoin Standard. So I never completed the book, like Connor likes to let me know, but I read the first half of it, and the first half of the Bitcoin Standard, it gives you the history of money. So for any bookworms out there, maybe even just listen to it on Audible, because it is available on Audible while you run or whatever. I think that will give you some of, you know, that essence behind money, and it might bring you closer to Bitcoin. But with that, so like you said at the start, you're now working at Spiral. What's your job title?
Before I say what it is, like, my team and we're not really big on job titles, so
I don't really
consider myself to have a job title, but the closest thing would be like a product manager.
Okay, and what is it that Spiral do as a business? Because I love it.
Yeah, so Spiral is part of Block, formerly known as Square. Block has a few organizations within it. It's got Square now, Cash App, Us, Spiral, and who's the other one? The TB Dex.
That's it.
TB Dex and the Hardware Wallet team as well. So there's a couple of organizations within Block. And my team specifically are focused on just helping to improve the Bitcoin open source ecosystem. So for a lot of people, Bitcoin is just software. It's just software that's running on computers all around the world in a distributed fashion. There are human beings behind this, coding this, making this a reality. So that 21 million coins cap that I spoke about earlier, it's coded into the software.
Yeah,
it's part of the software, right? So we're doing a lot to help move the ecosystem forward with regards to privacy, security, scalability, so more people can use it, and user experience as well.
So
we're very focused on making Bitcoin more than just a savings technology, and making it more than an investment, and ultimately making it hopefully a currency that can be used by everyday people.
Yeah, and just a question. Sorry, I'm going on a tangent, but you mentioned that the 21 million was coded in. I know that a question that comes from a lot of people who aren't typically technically savvy. If it was coded in, can it be coded out?
Yes, but there's so much social consensus around, like, this is what we believe Bitcoin to be. Like, the two most important things, in my opinion, about Bitcoin are the 21 million hard cap, and it's decentralized and no one can shut it down. And
so decentralized for listeners means that it isn't owned by one single entity.
Yeah, in a nutshell. And one of the things that emerges out of Bitcoin's decentralization is its resistance to state attacks. So if you want to know how hard or how good one some of these cryptocurrency projects are, if your government comes after it, can it be shut down? That's a good measure of whether or not this thing's going to be around for the long term. But
okay, perfect. And the reason I was, you know, talking about Spiral and the team and what they do, because I think it ties nicely into Miami, right? Were you going for work? Were you going as a Bitcoin enthusiast? How did that kind of come about? Because obviously this has been running for a few years now and this was your first time going, right?
Yeah, all of the above. So just to touch a little bit more on my team as well.
Go on.
No, it's okay. So we're currently... We give grants to Bitcoin developers, Bitcoin designers. So we currently fund over 24 developers, designers, some PMs who work on open source Bitcoin projects. Everything from scaling solutions like the Lightning Network to Bitcoin Core itself, the Bitcoin software as well. We have a couple of developers working on that. We have some people more focused on design, trying to make Bitcoin easy to use. So I'm always on the lookout for talented people who want to work on Bitcoin, and we provide no strings attached funding. Much of this has been made achievable because we have a leader like Jack Dorsey, who's like a very big advocate of Bitcoin and wanted to give back to the Bitcoin ecosystem and thought about what was the best way to do it. and the best way in his vision was to pay people to work on it.
100%. And just for the listeners, when Connor refers to Jack Dorsey, this is the same Jack Dorsey that you've been hearing about in the same breath as Elon Musk, because Jack did used to own Twitter.
Yeah.
He then stepped down as CEO, and obviously Elon Musk has just completed the takeover of Twitter. So that is who Connor is referring to. And he's a great person. And I suppose whilst we're on it, for any kind of Bitcoin enthusiast, you know, potentially looking for a grant, where can they find more information and potentially get in contact with Connor?
So they can head over to spiral.xyz. Mm-hmm. You can see a list of all our grantees and who's working on what. You can see a list of our full-time team as well, which consists of, at this point, five engineers who are all working on Bitcoin open source projects in the form of the Lightning Network, which is like a scaling solution to make it more accessible to people.
Mm.
If you're interested in applying for a grant, you can just hit up grants@spiral.xyz. Just send a proposal, have a conversation with me, or just DM me on Twitter if you're like interested in working.
These DMs are popping off.
I wish they were popping off more. Kind of quiet at the minute.
Oh, it's a bit quiet. We'll put all the links in the show notes. So thank you for that. So like we said, this takes us to Bitcoin Miami. What a conference, man.
Yeah.
I got to take
the boring stuff out of the way now, isn't it?
Yeah. So that is Bitcoin in its essence. And that is what took us abroad. For me, it was to be orange-pilled even further.
What's orange-pilling?
What is it? That's what I want to ask you, because before I let you answer, so I'm a big sci-fi stan. I've seen The Matrix. In The Matrix, there's the red pill and the blue pill, right? And one frees your mind. So what's the orange pill? Because is it a combination of both? Where does it come from?
Nah, obviously, it does... That's the reference, The Matrix, red pill, blue pill. It's just the fact that, like, when you open your eyes to, like, this new monetary revolution, it's kind of hard to turn back and see everything for what it is, you know? So it's that concept. It's just a funny meme type of thing. Yeah. Like, I don't necessarily advocate for taking pills. If I'm honest, but it's a fun meme nonetheless, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And
the logo for Bitcoin's orange, isn't it? So.
That's true. Thanks for clearing that up. So yeah, how does you were always planning on going to the Bitcoin conference, weren't you?
Yeah.
Had you wanted to go before and it was stopped by the pandemic, or was
I couldn't go to last year's one because of travel restrictions. I'd been working at Spiral for now at this point over a year, and I got a grant as well, so like let's say 18 months to 2 years. So I'd been working with a lot of my team for that period of time and never met a lot of them. So this would have been a good chance to meet up with them as well as the wider community.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to be there. Everyone's going to be there.
How many people do you think attended the conference roughly?
I think it was between 20 and 25,000.
Wow. To me, it felt like more.
Yeah.
It was bonkers.
3 days? Yeah.
Yeah.
Four days.
Yeah, it was like Wednesday to Saturday with a concert.
Yeah.
So many networking events. There was, so just to give the lowdown, so yeah, there was three types of passes. There was just an entry level pass, which was about $800.
You had entry level as well.
Yeah, entry level. So high-ish barriers to entry. You had the industry pass, which was about $1,500 to $1,700. And they had these ridiculous whale passes, which were like 15,000 to like 17,000. And they were basically all access passes, but it did give you the ability to kind of rub shoulders with some big people in the space. But you could rub shoulders with them anywhere, because for me personally, being newer to the Bitcoin community, it's just a fantastic community, man. Like, everybody, the vibe is just,
it's good to hear
point.
You say that, because sometimes on Twitter I do see like negative sentiments around like Bitcoiners and they're this, then that and the other, but Twitter's not the great place.
I think you answered your own question, right? It's online. Yeah. It's these people who they argue that, I could say this table's brown, they'll be like, nah, it's matte black or some stupidness. For me personally, I just felt so welcomed, man. Like, you introduce yourself, everybody's like you were saying, right, everybody's so passionate. Yeah. Like, there ain't anybody who is working in the Bitcoin space that doesn't want to be there. Mm. I mean, you find me that person and I'd say that they're a liar, because everybody is bought into the same thing. And I suppose the only other place where I've kind of seen this is like in church. honestly, it's like in church on a Sunday. Like, they're not, obviously, there's no idolizing of, if anything, it's just the essence, right? And the freedoms that it brings to
humanity. It's interesting you say that as well, because many people from the outside might come into the space through the price action.
Mm.
So when the price is going up, everyone wants to get involved.
100%.
But the prices since the top in maybe October, November of last year has dipped maybe 50 or 60%.
Yeah.
But you're still able to get a conference in April with 25,000 people.
Crazy.
So like, if that doesn't tell you that there's some substance to what's actually going on here beyond the price, then I don't know.
It's true. And I suppose for the listeners, what do you feel like the purpose of these conferences is? Because there's different groups of people. Yeah. For you, what would you say it is?
So Bitcoin Miami specifically, I think it brings everything to the table. So it brings, where I hang out a lot of the time is in the open source stage. So with the technical people, with the quote unquote nerds, with the people who are doing like hands-on stuff at the protocol level, building wallets, building apps, all this kind of fun stuff. Brings that community together.
Mm.
Brings the mainstream audience now, like on the main stage. Shout out to Miles, who hosted a panel with, who done a sick keynote for Cash App. And hosted a panel with Serena Williams, Odell Beckham, and
Aaron Rodgers.
Like big names, big sporting names.
So Connor, who's Aaron Rodgers?
I don't know.
He says Aaron Rodgers. He didn't know that he's like the MVP the NFL.
I've been getting killed for that. I don't watch NFL and all that.
Nah, but
I don't
really
know Odell
names.
Like that. But Serena, like, legend.
Fantastic.
But you're starting to see the merging of culture now.
Mm.
So sports, entertainment, music with Bitcoin now,
which is
great to see. Then you've got like mining, which is a whole nother industry around Bitcoin. They had their own stage.
Mm.
There was the Genesis stage as well. There was one more. I can't remember the other one, but so many different communities being brought together.
I think just to add to that, I think I know you said mainstream, but just like general fans, like.
Yeah.
There were people that were there, like, just fanboying, a bit like Comic-Con. Like, there's Michael Saylor. Oh, there's Pomp. Yeah. Oh, there's Aubrey. Oh, there's Peter. Like, people are going just to see who are now their heroes almost, because you got these people who were the face of kind of the Bitcoin revolution, and you knew that you had a chance of kind of rubbing shoulders with them and having a conversation. So I think some
it's
people are just there.
In terms of when you're there, maybe price, we can argue, is not.
Mm.
But when you're in there,
it's fantastic,
it's good to anyone.
So for you, I speak about the fact that you were a speaker. Mm. You also hosted a panel as well, didn't you? Yeah. Just elaborate.
Yeah, so I was in the open source stage. I hosted a panel which was about like, how do we improve the development experience in Bitcoin? Mm. So we had some esteemed guests. We had Matt Corallo, who works on my team at Spiral. We had Stephen Delorme, who's a designer. We had Steve Myers, who's working on a project called the BDK, which is helping to onboard developers to be able to build Bitcoin products.
Mm. That's the Bitcoin Development Kit, testing my knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. So we spoke about that, like, semi-technical conversation. And then I was on a panel hosted by Mike Schmidt about funding open source development. Because I think a lot of people think people who are building this are just getting paid as part of the protocol, or like, these people are volunteers.
Yes, mad.
They're volunteering. They're
mad.
But they get a lot of joy and love out of it just through the pure craftsmanship of building, you know, this new monetary network. So someone has to compensate these people, and we are one of those organizations that do that. So just wanted to talk about, you know, outline a plan for like sustainable funding for these people, for these teams, for these projects.
So. Yeah, and I was at both, obviously. Number one, I was basically calling security at the conference. Security, number one fan. And I'll take the chance to say you did a fantastic job, mate.
Appreciate
you spoke
man.
Really well, obviously in front of hundreds, if not like a couple of thousand people.
Yeah.
Like for you, you know, what was that experience like? Because I know you were saying that like, you couldn't even see the people because of so many lights.
Yeah, it was crazy. No, I love speaking about Bitcoin. Like any opportunity that is presented, I'm happy to talk about the work I've been doing, mingle with people from the community. I love that. It's all just positive for me. Like I do in other speak, I get more nervous in other speaking engagements than I do on stage.
Okay.
You know, like a Bitcoin conference, because I just feel so like
natural.
Everyone's just good vibes.
Oh, okay.
Just like, you know what I'm saying? Everyone's trying to move in the right direction. There's no like egos type of thing. It's just all good energy.
I suppose, and the one thing that springs to mind though, for any, I suppose, aspiring speakers, people who have dreams to speak in front of, you know, a significant number of people, does a lot of preparation go into it? Obviously,
yeah,
you're very well versed.
I do prepare. I don't have the skill set to just be able to freestyle on the fly, to be honest. Like, I know some people do, but yeah, I do prepare. I'd like to get better. I don't think I'm quite where I want to be just yet, but like there are, you know, even if it's courses you do or you prepare even more or whatever it might be, because in the moment, you can always forget certain key points that you wanted to get across to the audience. You know?
That's so annoying, isn't it?
Yeah, it's annoying. Like, you're like, oh, why didn't I say? You just, but sometimes as well, it's time as well.
Yeah.
So like, our thing was only 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And I had quite a few points I wanted to hit on. And I think I hit on a good percentage of them. But I was also conscious of not talking too long because the other guests,
of course,
want to get their stuff.
It's very techie, isn't it?
Yeah, it's techie.
So, with that in mind, next year. Big, you on the main stage? What are we saying?
Oh, I don't know about main stage. depends what work I put in this year, innit? I got to keep putting in work
I mean, I know we're going to continue talking about Miami, but you definitely want to go back, right?
Yeah.
Glowing recommendation.
Yeah, we ain't even talked about Miami.
No, we're going to get into that.
I recommend people try and, if it's not Miami, go to, even if it's your local Bitcoin meetup or in your local area or town, or you know, a conference in your local area or town to start with. Like Miami's probably a bit much.
It's a crazy
for your
first experience.
One, it might be a bit.
I had Connor was my translator basically.
Yeah.
So he helped distill everything down for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely if you can go to a local one, like we said, the community is very welcoming.
Yeah, exactly.
And they really take the time to explain references, to explain principles, to ask your opinion, to understand where you're at, and then guide you in the right direction. So yeah, definitely take the time to do that. And yeah, with that, so that's the conference. And then from a conference perspective, what was your highlight? Obviously, there were so many speakers. I'll talk about mine after, but was there a highlight for you?
For me, it was just meeting people that I hadn't met in real life after building relationships with them online for 18 months to 2 years, like seeing them.
Yeah.
That was just great, man. Because like some of these people I'd put in a lot of work with online, we'd built some good projects together and all this kind of stuff. And meeting people in person is funny sometimes. Like the heights are different, the mannerisms are different. So it's just so fun to like get to connect on that level, and you get to connect more on a human to human level, because like there's deeper things that you can't really go into over a Zoom or a Google Meet or
a
Jitsi or whatever. So
I remember a couple of people being like, Connie, you're so tall. Like,
yeah.
I didn't think you'd be this tall. Like, they like give a short energy on the internet somehow.
Yeah, you don't know, innit?
Oh my God. No, that's great. I think one of the things that really took me aback, there's a couple of things. Number one, it was the scale of the conference. It spanned over many days, but, and I mean, I know they're probably paid to be there, but the scope of like the main stage speakers, you know, we spoke about Serena, Odell, Aaron Rodgers, but you also had like the mayor of Miami. You had Jordan Peterson. You had...
What's her name? Naomi Park.
Yeah, Naomi Park, who basically she's escaped North Korea, basically. There was just so many so many influential people there, so many smart people there. And it once again just gives credence to the fact if all these people are invested in this, it's not going to zero. You know what? It can't go to too many. There's too many smart people on this thing now. There's too much investment for that to be the case. So, yeah, man, I really loved it. And for those people who might have missed the conference, even me, I'm still trying to catch up. You can still catch all of the talks on YouTube. I know
Bitcoin Magazine,
on Bitcoin Magazine. So please, you know, take the time. There were some fantastic talks. Go on Bitcoin Magazine and just immerse yourself in that to kind of understand what was going on.
Yeah. And just before we think, I'm trying to just create comparisons, but imagine you had the chance to like learn about the internet in either a local setting at a conference. Like, I don't know what an early 90s internet conference would have looked like. But imagine you had the opportunity to just be around it and learn and like make it part of your lifestyle. I'm sure many people would have jumped at that opportunity if they knew what they know about the internet today, right? So it can be difficult at first to wrap your head around and stuff, but just with a bit of perseverance, a bit of what's the word? If you kind of put your money where your mouth is as well, that gives you the impetus to want to actually learn
do more, it right? And I think also as well, you know, you've got to have the appetite for it. Like, if you don't want to learn about it, it's not going to go in. But if you're actually curious about it, then take the steps to kind of learn, is what we'd say. So that was one half of the conference. We only spoke about Miami, but the other half of the conference was just the networking side. It was just crazy, wasn't it?
It's just crazy, man.
A lot of people.
There's only certain things we can't even talk about in the podcast.
I mean, you got to speak to us personally. But I suppose, like, to Connor's point about being prepped, we didn't even... I mean, we were at some of these things, but because Connor was speaking and that, you know, we didn't go too hard. But there was some amazing events. Like, we went to a drinks reception for Alex Gladstein. He had his new book there.
He works at the Human Rights Foundation. Shout out to them because they do a lot of work and they've taught me a lot about why Bitcoin's important for human rights, for political activists around the world, for people who are living in dictatorships and authoritarianism. If they're living in those environments, why it's important as well. So
we went to that. I mean, and I think the thing about Miami that really struck me was all of the like events we went to, all of the venues were cold. There was some kind of rooftop, it was on the beach, the weather was fantastic. And yeah, all of these events, though, it was kind of, it was a little bit of an LA vibe. Like, you needed to know someone, didn't you?
At first, I didn't even clock, though. I don't know anything, man. There's a few that private events, you got RSVP on it. I'm like inviting other people to the event, and I'm getting blasted. Like, you can't invite other people to other people's events.
That's not RSVP works, bro.
I know.
Like, when he was sending me the itinerary, I was like, that guest list is full. That one's full. I can't get into this one. I can't get into that one. But to be fair to Con, man pulled through. Man pulled through, and he got me into everything. I think one that people like us to talk about, it's got to be the Gemini Bedford Park. Before we talk about the party, should we touch on what Real Bedford do, what Gemini does, and then we'll talk about the experience?
Gemini is a cryptocurrency exchange, one of the biggest in the US. Real Bedford, or Bedford FC, is a small non-league football team in England playing in Step 6 or Division 10. They've recently been acquired by Peter McCormack. Peter McCormack has the biggest podcast in Bitcoin.
Is it What Bitcoin Did?
What Bitcoin Did.
Yeah.
He's from Bedford. He's bought the club and he's going to rebrand
it. That's What Bitcoin Did.
Yeah. He's going to rebrand it from Bedford FC to Real Bedford.
That's so jokes.
And they, I'm on the board of the football club. So I'm on the board of Royal Bedford. I'm like director of Bitcoin services.
Fantastic.
Helping the club integrate Bitcoin in various ways.
Mm.
Part of the strategy at Royal Bedford is to like hold Bitcoin as a treasury reserve asset. So we believe if Bitcoin does what it's continuing to do over the long haul, that in the next 5 to 10 years we'll have a good treasure chest in which we can use to spend on players, on the club, and whatever it might be in very short terms.
You say short, and sorry to jump in there, but you know, I was lucky enough to speak to Pete and a few other people, and he has like a clear, he believes in 20 years they can get to the Prem and from division. So there's a lot of promotions, but we've seen stuff happen, especially with like Salford FC and a few other clubs who have had significant investment. Mm-hmm. But like, this is a real project, and it must be for you like really exciting to be on from the jump.
Yeah, it's crazy because obviously I've got a background in football, so to see the two worlds start to mix is kind of crazy. But to go back to Gemini, so Gemini are our lead sponsor.
Yeah.
I think we've raised close to £1 million in sponsorships from various companies in the Bitcoin space. So I think Gemini, Casa, Compass Mining, they've all chosen to sponsor us. So
£1 million for Division 10 is bonkers.
Yeah, it's bonkers. It's bonkers. So they very nicely threw us a party in Miami. It was a party.
Yeah.
It was definitely a party. I don't even know where to start with that one, to be honest.
Just the location. What was it? Star Island or something like that?
Star Island in Miami. Huge property, huge grounds.
Yeah.
Massive mansion. Over 1,000 people outside by the lake. Good vibes, good music playing. And it just... Yeah, a lot of the Bitcoin community were there.
Yeah.
The
who's who. A lot of the Bitcoin community were there. A lot of them are trying to get in as well. I mean, I remember every time I looked over to you, you was having to run to the front door to kind of let people in.
Yeah, that's a bit of a first for me. it's all good. Like, it was all good. It all worked out. Like,
it did.
I think everyone who wanted to come ended up getting in for the most part. Like,
what I'll try and do is I'll just try and share some pictures or a link to the venue. But yeah, it was a fantastic event, and it was just one of many. So we had that one.
Thank you to Gemini for that one, boy.
Yeah, thank you to Gemini. Thank you to Royal Bedford. The Bitcoin conference itself, it had a music festival the day after. They had people like Logic, Steve Aoki. So I don't want to say like work hard, play hard, but it was just a jovial atmosphere.
Yeah.
And there was just people, you know, enjoying. And it wasn't even like a, we're getting mash up. Mingle, you know, couple of drinks, or you know, we went to some things where they're giving us steak, like real good food and good conversation.
They're talking about doing it in Austin next year, man.
Are they?
Yeah. Would you be down for
moving
that?
It from Miami
just for next year? Well, for next year, yeah.
I mean, I went to Austin straight after, so
what,
yeah.
What are you saying about that? Or to Miami?
I think I would prefer Miami, considering I went to Austin.
Yeah.
But I'd go to both. Like, the weather would be good in Austin.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, Con, lasting thoughts on the conference.
Yeah, conference.
Cold.
If you've not experienced it before, like, go to a couple of things first just to warm yourself up. But yeah, it's definitely gonna keep growing. I don't know how big, like, the biggest conference is, but it's on its way to maybe being that. And I think it's actually been the springboard for the first Bitcoin conference in Africa, which is going to happen later this year as well.
In Ghana,
I think it will be, yeah. I think they're still confirming some bits and bobs, but I think, if there was a Bitcoin 2023 or 2024 in Africa as well, that would be...
That'd be humongous. Yeah. There's a lot of Africans who are contributing big way to the space, which is one of my takeaways from this trip. I think I'll just close off on the conference side by saying, I mean, for me, I work in tech, right? And it is like any other conference. So you've got like the exhibition hall.
Yeah, we didn't even.
You had so many. You had so many stands. So you had the exchanges. You had like fashion. You had art. There was so much. There was so much stuff there for everyone. It really was almost like a carnival. With the talks and all of that good info, and you know, just a special shout out to. So obviously with Bitcoin, you know, the term is when things are going well, they're bullish, and when things are going badly, it's bearish. There was a Bitcoin like mechanical bull in the middle of the conference hall, and there was a competition where people would ride the mechanical bull, and the person who had ridden it for the longest by the end of the conference got one whole Bitcoin. Crazy. So at today's value, that's what, like $40,000?
Yeah.
Just for riding a bull for, I think it was like 2.5 minutes. Crazy. So many incentives, whether it is financial, you know, knowledge, whatever, to come, and, you know, we guarantee that you'll have a good time. So that was the Bitcoin conference. Now, let's talk about like Miami, like as
my first time in there
as a place. So I actually went there in November as well. So I was quite familiar with the place, needed to chop it up. But yeah, Con, talk to me. You get off the plane, like,
didn't love the airport.
What's your thoughts? It's mad, isn't it?
Didn't love the airport.
Like,
the airport's meaty, man.
We were in security for what, like 45? I mean, you got through quicker than me because you were a premium economy, but
yeah,
I was queuing for a long time.
Yeah, I didn't love that airport's not great, man. Even on my way home, there's like one turnstile for security, so like the queues are just mad. But
do you want to know what's funny is that, so domestic, way easier.
Oh, really?
So I obviously flew from Miami to Austin.
Yeah.
Like all this fingerprint scanning, all that, there's none of it, bro. And like duty free and all that.
Yeah.
It's like it's tailored to domestic rather than international.
Okay.
Same thing in LAX as well. It's bonkers. I don't really get it. Yeah. But yeah, the airport wasn't great, was it? So, like,
but who cares, innit? It's the airport. You're not.
But just be prepared, like if you're booking, let's say a transfer or whatever, you ain't getting out straight away. You might have to wait an hour. So yeah, we arrive, we touch down, and we're both staying in South Beach.
Yeah, South Beach, Ocean Drive, straight on Ocean Drive.
Straight.
Ocean Drive is where like it's just chaos.
That's
in a good and bad way. It's just like busy clubs, bars, food, restaurants, literally by the beach.
Yeah. Fantastic.
It's great setting.
Flashy
lifestyle.
Yeah, you stayed at the Crescent, didn't you?
Yeah, the Crescent.
I stayed at Hotel Victor. Okay. So two different hotels. I can't really quote prices because it was during the conference time. Like, I know how much it was, but it was during the conference time. I think the prices were just dumb.
Yeah.
Like, I paid like through the nose. I wouldn't even recommend people going for that price. But what I learned, you know, it's going to pay me back in the long run, in Jesus' name. But yeah, man, Con, talk about South Beach. Because when I went in November, we went to South Beach, but we went for an afternoon.
Right.
It was quiet. It was like a Monday because we were leaving the next day.
Right.
But yeah, it was just, the atmosphere was wild.
Because as well, we went during the time where you had the Bitcoin conference, you had Pride.
Yeah.
And you had spring break.
Yeah.
So like those three just meant it
cocktails.
Was just like so lit, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's so much stuff going on.
Like I couldn't actually sleep because it was just so loud through my hotel window.
It's like the strip. It's like, it's just that Ocean Drive strip is just crazy. Flashy lifestyle, flashy cars.
Oh, women, yeah.
Like parties. What about some of the places we went to that were on South Beach Ocean Drive?
So we've got Clevelander.
You got the Clevelander. That was interesting.
Shout out Hotel Victor, actually, that did us much a couple of nights. Thoroughly enjoyed that.
Yeah.
There were a couple of other places. They just looked a bit too ratchet.
Yeah.
We had to swerve it. Yeah, we had to keep it moving.
I can get a bit ratchet down there.
Yeah. There was Cleveland. And what was the other one? It was recommended to us. Oh, I can't remember. We went in there. I'm gonna need to.
It's not far from Cleveland.
No.
They're all the same sort of. Yeah.
And then, yeah, the beach itself, lovely. Mm. You've got so many volleyball courts. Mm. So they really, like, I suppose they encourage an active lifestyle, isn't it?
Everyone's running or exercising or, like, because they have those, like, the outdoor gyms, right? That wasn't Muscle Beach, though.
I think Muscle Beach was a bit further, but I was also being told, I think Muscle Beach is in LA. Right. So people are saying, someone was mentioning Muscle Beach in LA. So I don't actually think it's in Miami.
But there was a lot of outdoor gym stuff. So much people working outside. Volleyball, like you say, that was good to see. People just going for runs.
Tech ball.
Through the boardwalk. Tech ball.
Yeah.
Like, and then, it's just so, like, it's just like everyone's playing out.
Yeah. Like, it's, if you went there in that period for a week, you would never really run out of things to do. You could stay on that strip for like the whole weekend,
yeah.
And you'd find a different pocket every time. Because like we're saying, we went on the Pride weekend, and Pride was very prominent, shall I say, on South Beach.
Yeah.
Saw some sights, man. Yeah. Saw some flamboyant costumes. Saw some things hanging where they shouldn't have been.
Yeah, like,
things hanging everywhere. But thoroughly enjoyable, though. And the energy was just... the energy was right. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There are some places that you go to where, I don't know, you don't feel too safe or whatever. Yeah. But everyone was on the same stuff, weren't they?
Yeah, and obviously just the weather's fantastic.
Fantastic.
I think that you do come across quite a lot of homeless people in Miami.
Wild.
And they're active as well. They're like hustling.
What was it that happened to us? Like, the guy was like,
you got that? Yeah, like, obviously a lot of them are overdosed or whatever you want to say. Yeah,
can I actually just, I want to take a moment, because for those who've seen my Twitter, you'll know that I tweeted about it. The homeless situation in America, it's no joke, man.
No.
And the way I talk about it is, like, in the UK, obviously we do have homeless and it isn't a great situation, but the homeless in the UK, they're like fighting, like, you know, they want a couple pence here so they can find somewhere to sleep, whatever, a little bit of food. In America, the only way I can describe it is, like, they've given up. Like, they don't want your money, they don't want your food, they're not even of sound body and mind. Like, the opioid crisis in America, because I went to Austin, worse. San Diego, worse. People say that LA is worse than all of them, and I didn't even see it that bad in LA. But everywhere I went, it supposedly got them worse, because these are like the warmer climates, right? So this is where a lot of the homeless people go, because they're not going to be too cold and whatever. But in Austin, saw people like going to the bathroom number two on a wall in broad daylight. A lot of people talking to themselves, people sleeping on the pavement. People with tents erect on the pavement. Yeah, man. Like, for all of the positives and the great time that I had, like, in Miami and all over America, you've got to remember, like, the lack of welfare. It's not a joke, man.
Not joking.
It's actually not a joke. So, just wanted to shed light.
Yeah.
Yeah, be mindful of that. So, talking about Miami as well. So, obviously, we were on South Beach, but there are other places where you can stay and you can go to kind of enjoy yourself. So one that I'll touch on is Mid Beach. So in Mid Beach, you've got the Fontainebleau, which is where I stayed when I went in November. Like, bad hotel, like crazy. You got Club Live there, which is interesting in itself. But then you've also got, for any, you know, members club people, you've got Soho House. So Soho House is actually right next to the Fontainebleau.
Yeah.
And that was lovely, wasn't it?
That was good, man.
Yeah, I think, you know, Soho House memberships in general, in the UK, they're all right, but having that access globally, it just, like, brings you into a different pocket, which was thoroughly enjoyable, is what I said.
Quiet beaches and stuff like that, so.
Yeah, and we got to catch up with, shout out Steve Lee, had some
Steve.
fantastic chats with Steve, all around, that was nice. Also, just wanted to touch upon Little Havana. So I don't think you went there, but it's like a Cuban territory. And I don't know about you, but when you were in Miami, did you notice that a lot of people spoke Spanish?
Yeah, when I went into, like, all the corner shops, just the local shops, just to pick up small things, all of the people working at the kiosks and stuff were, like, Latino,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Is Miami close to the border? I don't know.
Yeah.
It is.
Right by, like, isn't it right by, like, the Caribbean kind of...
Yeah, but Caribbean, mate. They're not saying wild.
Yeah, but like Cuba. I mean, like, Cuba.
Oh, okay.
Like,
my geography is not very good.
Yeah, so mine, to be fair.
Yeah, I think
that's right.
But I know, like, in San Diego, so San Diego, where I went to, that's right next to, like, Tijuana,
right,
which is Mexico. So, yeah, you see, like, a lot of Latin people there. Yeah. But Miami was on the East Coast. But, yeah, you got Little Havana. Also, when I went previously, we went to the FTX Arena. FTX is actually another crypto exchange, but they sponsored the Miami Heat. Saw the basketball. Obviously, after the conference, you were actually there for another week. Did you get up to many other things? Go to any other places around Miami whilst you were there?
No, it was mainly work. Actually, we actually ended up renting an apartment on South Beach again.
Nice.
Yeah, it was good. It was nice. But we went to, like, Wynwood. Is it Wynwood?
Oh, yeah, we did,
we did. My friend Paco took us to Wynwood, which the closest thing I could say to here is maybe, like, a Shoreditchy type of vibe. Like,
yeah. Sort of. Where did we go? What was that place called?
Dante's
Hi-Fi.
Dante's Hi-Fi.
Yeah.
That's a little spot, man.
Fantastic spot.
That was a little spot, that's man. Like, Dante's Hi-Fi. I recommend that one.
Yeah, thoroughly. It's like a cool evening. You got this really cool DJ who's playing, like, vinyls.
Yeah.
It's very sophisticated.
Yeah.
And hidden as well. Wouldn't have known it was there.
That was sick.
We did Wynwood on another night as well, didn't we?
Yeah. With our friend Justin.
We just went to a few spots. I think it was called, I always say Racket, but was it?
It might have been called,
it's
Racket.
Called, it was called Racket.
Yeah, I think it was.
And then, yeah, there were a couple of other spots. But one to shout out that we didn't go to, it's like Kiki's on the roof or on the river.
Okay.
That got shouted out. And then there was a couple of others, man. I'm going to put them in the show notes. But, I mean, all in all, there's just a lot to do in Miami, and you can have a really enjoyable time.
It's expensive.
That was the one thing I wanted to touch on.
Yeah, it's not cheap, man.
It's not cheap, and the tipping culture is real.
Yeah.
18% minimum. Like, they're asking for service, and then they're giving you a blank sheet for optional tip. like you've not just paid 18% service charge, and everything is inflated. One of the things I grasped from my trip is that standard America is more expensive than standard England, is what I'll say. And what I mean by that is, like, I've got mates who, like, you know, they go to Mayfair. Mayfair prices are stupid. And maybe that does marry up to, like, LA and Miami and whatever. But you go to Texas for food, everything's like minimum 20-25 quid. Like, you ain't getting Manny and everything being 20-25 quid. You ain't going Newcastle, everything being 20-20. Like, London, I understand it, but just standard places in America, pricing is bonkers and the pound has lost its strength.
True. Yeah, true.
It's like 80p gets you a dollar, where it used to be 50p.
Yeah.
It used to be double. So that is something to keep in mind. I know people love to go to you know, America to, you know, let their pounds go further. They don't actually go that far.
Not anymore, innit?
They don't.
Would you say it's value for money, though? It depends, innit?
Fantastic question.
Depends.
For me personally, I'd say yes. If you have the means to do it, it's a weird one. Like, Americans treat us so well.
Yeah, they do. They do.
And it's really weird because I had a few conversations with people in the main cities in America. And this is, like, weird. I can't really understand this, but it's like we're treated like British people before we're treated like black people in the main cities.
Yeah.
As soon as you get further out, like deep south, they don't care.
They're not trying to hear it. They don't care about the accent.
They don't care about the accent. But if you're in, like, a major city, the accent, it holds some strength. And people are just, the vibe is, like, everyone just wants you to meet everyone, to go to this dinner, to go to that dinner. I mean, for you, would you ever, I mean, I know you're a bit of a nomad, would you ever consider living in America based on what you've seen?
America, yeah, I'd consider it. Miami, I could live in Miami, of course. I could live in Miami, but it's where you're going to be able to maintain, like, a high level of focus.
Yeah.
And but saying that, Miami's got a lot going on business-wise. Austin's got a lot going on business-wise. So there's a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of, there's a lot of opportunities to connect and work with different types of people. So for me, and they're very, like, liberal states as well, like, in terms of, like, their political landscape in that they allow their citizens to be like quite free. So like,
yeah, but too free. And sorry to just cut you up before I let you go. In Austin, Texas, like I said it to a few people. I don't want to say I had a panic attack, but like, essentially what happened was me and my mate Lou, we were walking down the road, and on the other side of the road there was a guy, like a brother, like he just had like a waistcoat on, bare chest, cowboy hat. He had a shotgun hoisted over his shoulder, just like pacing up and down, like just pacing. And like for me, I didn't know what to do. Like I saw the shotgun, and I wanted to turn around, but then I was like, if I turn around, I look suspicious. He's gonna leg man down. And I was like, if I keep walking, he's gonna leg man down. Like, and I think, you know, I'm a fan of like being liberal and that. But for me, the gun culture in some states in America is too wild, man.
It's too much.
Rattling. Well, you don't seem fazed. Like, you're like,
I'm all right with it.
You're all right with it. Even a shotty. I think little pistol, like police, calm. Yeah. Shotty's just, it's over. There's no comeback. Shotty, your head gone.
Yeah, I mean, I value freedom above everything, innit? So,
even with that?
Yeah, I'm cool, innit?
Okay.
Because I don't believe the answer to those things are like intervention from governments necessarily. Like, I think there are other solutions to that. And I don't know if there's anything to suggest that places in Texas are any less safe than Chicago or than New York City or London. Like, I don't know, innit? Like,
yeah. All right. So, yeah, just some final thoughts before I let you go. If you were to live in America, you said you'd think about it, but you're saying Austin or Miami?
As it stands, but for me, I don't want to get trapped in, like, London's enough stuff that we have to deal with, like from taxes to how being the type of people we are and climbing through the system. There's enough barriers and stuff that man have to deal with.
To go and start
again.
America's
very different though, because there are opportunities to climb it maybe in a bit easier, and being from Britain. So there's definitely a lot of opportunities over there. So I definitely wouldn't rule it out, but I'm definitely someone who's thinking about like emerging markets as well. Like, what's the next America? Like, America, is America moving in the right direction for the next 10 to 15 years?
What is the next America?
I don't know. Like,
Africa.
I don't know. I don't know what the next America is, but like, people act like a lot of the stuff that's in America cannot be found anywhere else in the world. Yeah. Like, you got fantastic cities in Japan, in China, in the UAE, the Middle East. Like, Africa's starting to rise. Like, there's places, man. But obviously, America's the creme de la creme. Like, UK's creme de la creme. So there's a lot of conveniences and stuff that you just can't get in certain places, right?
Yeah.
But I wouldn't rule it out.
And just to wrap up, so obviously this has been a big year for you. It's been a big year for Bitcoin. What do you see happening over the next year in Bitcoin for yourself personally, and then, you know, Bitcoin as a currency in its essence, I suppose?
So I think I predict maybe another one or two countries will make Bitcoin legal tender that we don't expect.
Okay.
That we're like, whoa, they made it. Like, because we've had El Salvador,
Central African Republic.
We've had the Central African Republic now stamp it in law that you can now use Bitcoin as a form of money in that country. So I expect to see one or two more, but they're going to be ones that are like, wow, that's really making a statement. I expect to see that. And I just expect to see like more adoption as well, more people like using it to save, more people using it as a form of transferring value around the world. Those are the things I'd like to see. And more people wanting to come and work in the space as well. I think people don't necessarily view working on Bitcoin as a viable career choice. But there's so many different companies that need so many different types of people.
Yeah.
And I definitely see that emerging as well. So like,
On that, obviously there's like Pomp has like Pomp Crypto Jobs or something like that. Are there any, I saw a few stands like Bitcoin Jobs, are there any that come to mind for you?
Those are the main ones, like Pomp Crypto Jobs. You've got bitcoinerjobs.com. Those are probably two good starting points, I think.
Yeah, and then just research.
Yeah.
Utilizing your network, you know. But yeah, come with that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, great episode. Thank you again, man. Third time. And, you know, I said it before, I'll say it again. You really smashed it.
Appreciate it.
Consider me.
No, you got to post the links to the talks in the thing.
Man. Yeah, I will do. I will do. I'll add them.
It's a bit techie. It's a bit techie, but
is it from the Bitcoin magazine?
Yeah,
from I'll find it, or I'll get you to send it to me, and I'll add them. But guys, yeah, thanks so much for listening. If you've made it this far, remember to follow us, man. Like, subscribe, share the thing. Support my boy Connor. Connor, I don't know. You want to plug Hello Bitcoin if you want to.
Yeah, Hello Bitcoin's a good place. If you're interested in, if you're a very newbie and you want to learn,
and maybe your Twitter,
Hello Bitcoin, and then yeah, just my full name on Twitter, Connor Okus. That hit man up if you've got any questions about Bitcoin, and I'm sure I can steer you in the right direction.
Yeah, and then just catch him on a few Instagram reels doing some Amapiano dancing.
Yeah,
as well.
the hat is Amapiano inspired.
what was the name? What was the name? Amapiocus or something?
Yeah, Amapiocus. I'm not Amapiano Ocus.
Amapiano Ocus. Yeah. And with that, guys, it's been Vibes and Tribes. Thank you so much, Con. Over and out.